It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Although bedbugs in the United States declined to near extinction several years ago, the increase in global travel and the banning of several unsafe pesticides have led to their reappearance. These pests are especially vexing to landlords and tenants alike and are causing endless controversy over some basic questions. Who's responsible for a bedbug problem, and who has to pay the costs of extermination?
Special correspondent Katie Kitts from the University of Richmond School of Law interviews your host, Marty Wegbright, about bedbugs and why landlords, and not tenants, are responsible for eradicating the problem and paying the costs. And if you need repairs in rental housing, you'll find out how to get that done legally in our weekly question and answer session. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 128, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's news you can use. In the last 3 months of 2010, Virginia car title lenders made nearly 25,000 loans worth more than $21 million, according to data collected for the first time since the state started regulating the lenders. Car title lenders were unregulated in Virginia until October, when a new law took effect that limited how much the companies can charge, how much they can lend, and for how long. Despite the new law, more than 3,500 borrowers missed payments for at least 60 days during those 3 months, and nearly 200 had their vehicles repossessed. Consumer advocates gasp at those figures and wonder how 14% of borrowers could already be 2 months behind, only 3 months or less, into their car title loans. It's because people who get car title loans are trapped in a cycle of debt, where now they can't continue the cycle through repeated flipping of payday loans or repeated advances on an open-end credit loan. As a result, they default almost immediately on car title loans. Any loan product that has an almost immediate 14% default rate is not a good product. Imagine that a piece of equipment, rather than a loan, had a failure rate that high. The piece of equipment would be considered a defective product, and its sale would not be permitted. In other news, last month, Virginia organizing activists were kicked out of a shareholder meeting held at the Tysons Corner Ritz-Carlton for Coventry Health Insurance, the sixth largest health insurer in the nation. Several consumer shareholders, including Paula Neustadter and Joe Katz, held proxies to go inside the meeting and speak in support of a shareholder proposal to disclose political contributions used to influence elections. Virginia Organizing believes that we have a right to know how our healthcare system operates and where our healthcare insurance premiums go. However, despite having the proper credentials, Neustadter and Katz were blocked by Coventry staff from speaking. When Neustadter attempted to speak on the transparency resolution, the microphone was promptly whisked away from her. As the consumer shareholders were blocked from commenting inside the room, activists were chanting outside the meeting in order to draw attention to Coventry's abusive practices. Eventually, Coventry's CEO paused and motioned to one of his staff to deal with the disturbance outside. Security then escorted the protesters out of the building, with one of the protesters joking, "This is the nicest place I have ever been kicked out of." With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. You are listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's case that changed the Commonwealth is Israel versus Virginia Employment Commission. Leslie Israel was employed as a coal truck driver for Stenson Enterprises for 3 years. He was accident-free until July 1986, when he had two minor accidents within a single week, causing a total of $1,200 in damages. He was fired, and when he applied for unemployment compensation, denied due to intentional work-related misconduct. However, the Court of Appeals of Virginia reversed, finding that when the accidents were viewed together, they were not so recurrent as to find Mr. Israel had acted with misconduct. The court reasoned that he had been employed for more than 3 years by the employer and had been involved in only two accidents, and that even though those accidents had occurred within the same week, the accidents did not rise to the level of misconduct. This has been the law ever since. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and Israel versus Virginia Employment Commission is this week's case that changed the Commonwealth.
We turn once again to our weekly question and answer session, and we have a questioner in the studio with us. Tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Brian. I'm from Goochland County.
Welcome to the show, Brian. Tell us your question for this week.
I have a question about my landlord. If there's anything legally I can do to make him do the repairs to the place I'm staying at this present time.
And what seems to be the problem, and how long has it been there?
The bathroom floors are rotten. They're sinking in. The air conditioner broke. He said he's going to buy a new unit for the air conditioner, and he hasn't done anything about it.
All right, and two more questions. Number one, are you current in your rent?
Yes, I am.
And second, have you given the landlord any type of notice in writing?
No, I have not.
All right, we get this question a lot, and to get repairs done in Virginia, a tenant has to do three things. First, you have to be current in your rent and stay current. Second, you have to give a written notice to your landlord about what the problem is, or make sure that someone else, like the building inspector, has given written notice on your behalf. Third, you have to wait a reasonable period of time for the landlord to make the repairs. The law doesn't really set forth a reasonable period of time, but typically that's going to be 21 to 30 days unless it's a true emergency situation like no heat in the winter or bad plumbing leak or no electricity or something like that, in which case it could be a matter of days or even hours. Now, if you do all three of those things, you're current in your rent, you stay current, you give written notice or someone else provides written notice for you, and you wait a reasonable period of time, and the landlord still has not made those repairs, the law does provide you a remedy, and it is the only remedy allowed by Virginia law. You're not allowed to withhold your rent. You're not allowed to make the repairs and deduct the costs from your rent. What you have to do, your only remedy, is to take your next month's rent and the notice that you gave the landlord, take it to your local general district court, and file what's called a tenant's assertion, and you pay your next month's rent into court. You get a court date probably in about 3 weeks, and the judge who hears the case can do any number of things. The judge can order some or all of the rent money returned to you, or all of or some of the rent money paid to the landlord, or can order the money held by the court until the landlord makes the repairs, or if you wish, can even end your lease entirely. Do those sound like reasonable remedies for you?
Hey, yes, they do. That's a big help. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you much for being on the show.
Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. I'm Special Correspondent Katie Kitts from the University of Richmond School of Law. Although bedbugs in the United States declined to near extinction several years ago, the increase in global travel and the banning of several unsafe pesticides have led to their reappearance. These pests are especially vexing to landlords and tenants alike and are causing endless controversy over some basic questions. Who's responsible for a bedbug problem, and who has to pay the costs of extermination? Here to set the record straight is the producer and host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, Marty Wegbright. Marty, will you explain to our listeners exactly what are bedbugs?
Sure, Katie. The common bedbug is a parasite which lives on the outside of the body of the host. They feed only on the blood of warm-blooded hosts. They can conceal themselves in tight cracks, crevices, and they're often found in bedding, such as mattresses and box springs, but they can also hide behind baseboards, folded areas of beds, bedding, adjacent furniture. They can hide in electrical switch plates, picture frames, wallpaper. They can hide pretty nearly anywhere inside of a home, a car, a train, an airplane, a bus, a shelter, a hospital room, a motel room, pretty much anywhere. The reason they're called bed bugs is they generally prefer to be curled up inside of cloth or clothing and near a warm-blooded host, and for them a bed is just about perfect.
A lot of people wonder, do bed bugs carry disease?
Well, that's one of the three big myths about bed bugs, and no, they don't. All they want is your blood, the blood of a warm-blooded host. They're like mosquitoes, basically. They use the blood to feed themselves, and they will then go off, the females anyway, and hide for about 5 to 10 days. They'll lay eggs, and then you got a whole new generation of bed bugs to deal with. But no, they are not disease-carrying insects.
Does poor housekeeping have anything to do with a bedbug infestation?
Well, that's the second big myth about bedbugs. And no, poor housekeeping has really nothing to do with a bedbug infestation. Again, they're not interested in garbage, trash, other food items, whatever may be lying around, poor housekeeping or not. All they're interested in is a warm-blooded host, and that's basically us. They usually do feed at night, and that's why we notice them in the morning, because we sleep on the bed, the bed bugs are hiding nearby, they come out and they eat and they go back and hide, and then we wake up in the morning with bites which are itchy and certainly very uncomfortable.
And you said earlier there were three big myths about bed bugs. What's the third myth?
The third myth, and this I think is the biggest one, is that tenants are somehow responsible for the problem. And this is not just me speaking. This is the Department of Housing and Urban Development. Back in March of this year, the Chicago region of the Department of Housing and Urban Development got together with representatives from other federal agencies, as well as local government agencies, with resident and community organizations, housing and their industry partners, other nonprofit organizations, as well as pest control entities. So they really had all of the stakeholders at the table. And they put together some basic facts that could help landlords and tenants deal with this problem. This is a 7-page memo that they published in March of this year. And the basic conclusion that they came to, and I'm quoting directly from the memo, is this. It is very important to understand that it is virtually impossible to prove fault with regard to who may have created the bed bug infestation within a property. And they had a number of reasons underlying that conclusion. Basically, bed bugs are excellent hitchhikers, and they can be transported to your home from literally any place to literally any place by anyone that's been in contact with the pest. They can be introduced simply by hitchhiking on the clothing or belongings of anyone, a resident or a visitor. And they could be introduced to a property by the landlord, by the landlord's employees, or the maintenance personnel, or contractors, or vendors, or government representatives, or anyone who has had access to the property. There's no one who's immune from transporting these pests from one place to another. They're not linked to poor sanitation and poor housekeeping, as I mentioned earlier. And again, the conclusion that the Department of Housing and Urban Development came up with is that it is virtually impossible to prove fault with regard to who may have created the bed bug infestation within a property.
What do landlords typically do when tenants report bed bugs?
Unfortunately, most landlords don't react in a very positive manner. They try to blame the problem entirely upon the tenant. They often will be slow in doing the treatment. They often won't be effective in doing the treatment. And if the treatment is slow and or ineffective, or they think that it's the fault of the tenant, they will bill the tenant for the costs of the extermination, for which there is absolutely no legal authority. The reason for that is that routine maintenance and repair, and certainly dealing with a bedbug infestation is part of routine maintenance and repair, by Virginia law is the responsibility of the landlord. And it's only if the tenant is at fault can the costs be shifted to the tenant. And as the HUD memo points out, it is virtually impossible to prove fault. Since it's impossible to prove fault, it's the landlord's responsibility.
So do landlords have any legal authority to bill tenants for the cost of bedbug extermination?
I'll just say flatly, there is no legal authority that allows a landlord to require a tenant to pay for the cost of bedbug treatment.
So what should landlords do when tenants report bedbugs?
What they should do is react in a positive manner. What they should do is actually encourage the reporting of bedbug problems so they can be dealt with early. When the report is made, they should first inspect the unit, confirm that the pest is in fact a bedbug, and if so, they should immediately begin to treat the problem. They should not only treat the affected unit, but all of the units surrounding that particular unit, upstairs, downstairs, right and left, a whole 360 suite. There are indeed some people who say you have to treat the entire building, and you probably have to come back and do it more than once, because once the bed bugs have bitten, they go off to lay their eggs, they're not going to feed for about 5 to 10 days, during which time the new generation is being born. So you probably have to do it at least twice and maybe more than that. But that's what landlords should be doing. They should be working cooperatively with their tenants. They should not be punitive and penalize tenants, which results in discouraging reporting and results in the problem getting worse until it gets finally reported and it's a much bigger problem at that point.
Many landlords advise or even require tenants to throw away bedding and furniture after a bedbug infestation. Is this necessary?
Not usually. Again, only on the advice of a qualified pest control professional should a landlord notify residents that they should dispose of furnishings, and this should only be done as a last resort, certainly not as a first resort, and certainly not just upon the landlord saying so without any qualified expert backing that up. Typically, it can be dealt with, especially with the box springs and the mattresses, by zipping them into bedbug covers. Once the bedbugs are in there, they can't get out. Guess what? They can't feed on a warm-blooded host, and they'll eventually starve and die, locked up safely inside of the bedbug cover. So it is typically not necessary to throw away furnishings, beddings, which is very expensive for tenants and can cost them hundreds of dollars. And in most cases, it's completely unnecessary, and the landlords are basically acting arbitrarily and capriciously by saying you have to do that.
So if the tenant does not have to pay for the cost of bedbug extermination, how is the landlord supposed to pay for it?
As I stated earlier, it's really part of routine maintenance and repair. It's part of the cost of doing business. If the landlord has not built that cost into the rents that they're currently charging, well, then the next time it's possible to raise the rent, then the landlord can certainly raise the rent to cover that additional cost if, in fact, that cost is really there. I should add just parenthetically that when landlords do try to bill tenants for the cost of bedbug extermination, they are often vastly overbilling. I've seen bills $350 to $500 and more. The actual cost, and this is told to me by a landlord representative, is about $100 per unit. So the cost is not that great. If there's a problem, they can always raise the rents down the road. There may even be federal subsidies for federally subsidized landlords to cover those costs. The one thing they cannot do is go ahead and bill the tenant.
If a landlord does go ahead and bill a tenant for the cost of bedbug extermination, what should the tenant do?
What the tenant should do is not ignore the bill. What I think the tenant should do is to write the landlord a reply letter. The letter should be a common business letter. Landlord's name and address, tenant's name and return address, signed and dated, and the letter should state in the tenant's own words, "I don't owe this bill. I have no responsibility to pay for the cost of bedbug treatment." Moreover, I think the letter should go one step further and say that none of the future payments, rent or otherwise, to the landlord should be applied to the bill for the cost of the bedbug treatment, again, because they don't owe it.
Now, most leases say that the tenant's payments get applied to the oldest charge first, so if the tenant doesn't pay a bedbug bill in June, then many landlords will apply part of July's rent to the bedbug bill, making some of July's rent considered late and causing the landlord to charge July late fees. What should a tenant do about this?
Again, continuing to write the landlord, because as you pointed out, the landlord's going to consider that to be an unpaid bill, and when the next month's rent gets paid, they apply it to the bill, and that makes part of the next month's rent unpaid, and that causes late fees. Tenants should not just ignore that either. Again, with every subsequent rent payment, again, write that same common business letter. Landlord name and address, tenant name and return address, sign it and date it. Dear landlord, enclosed is my payment of X dollars for July's rent. Do not apply any of this to the bedbug charge or any charge other than July's rent. This is only for July's rent, not for any other charge. I deny owing the bedbug charge. As with the first letter, and as with this letter, and every other letter, copy it and save a copy of it. It is so helpful to your attorney and so impressive to the judge to see those letters.
And finally, what should a tenant do if the landlord takes the tenant to court over this?
If the landlord takes the tenant to the court over this, get legal help and get it right away. If you're low income and you can't afford an attorney, we will tell you at the end of this show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case from Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. If you're not low income, contact a private attorney or contact the Virginia Lawyer Referral Service, 775-0808, and they can refer you to a private attorney to consult with for a $35 fee for half an hour consultation to get legal help. But do not ignore this at all. Get legal help. And if you've documented the problem the way I've suggested, and if you've got a copy of that 7-page HUD memo, which is available from Central Virginia Legal Aid Society, just email me, marty@cvlas.org. I would be happy to email it to you. I think it would be very impressive to the judge, and I think it's time for tenants to stand up and fight this.
Thank you very much. We've been speaking with the producer and host of the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, Marty Wegbright, about the legal and financial responsibility for bedbugs in landlord-tenant cases. Thanks for setting the record straight. From the University of Richmond School of Law, I'm Special Correspondent Katie Kitts.
You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's Strange But True Law is from Title 15.2, which deals with counties, cities, and towns. Under Code of Virginia 15.2-1812, a locality may permit the erection of monuments for any war, including the Algonquin, French and Indian, Revolutionary, War of 1812, Mexican, Confederate or Union monuments of the war between the states, Spanish American, World War I, World War II, Korean, Vietnam, Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, Global War on Terrorism, Operation Enduring Freedom, and Operation Iraqi Freedom. It is unlawful for anyone to disturb or interfere with any such monuments. And in the case of the war between the states, it is unlawful to place Union markings on previously designated Confederate memorials, or to place Confederate markings on previously designated Union memorials. In other words, no switching sides. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Michelle King, and that's this week's Strange But True Law.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is now available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral for, all.net. Then click the contributor link. Then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We all buy products every day, but what if what you purchase is seriously and dangerously defective? Join us next week when private attorney Ted Allen from the law firm of Allen & Allen explains the law of product liability. That's law for the rest of us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.